Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 125, Smorgasbord, December 2018. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I'm Roger, your host, and of course you know this is the podcast. It's all about home cooking, getting in the kitchen, having more fun, learning new things. Well, it's been a little while since I've been with you. Been kind of busy, been a little travel for work and just, you know, holiday stuff, getting ready and recovering from Thanksgiving and all that. But I do have several episodes in the hopper here, so we should be able to get quite a few out here in the next little bit. And today, I'm going to be doing a smorgasbord episode, which if you've listened to the show for the last year or so, you know these are episodes that I do that are kind of not one specific category or topic, I should say, but maybe a mix of shorter topics. And a couple of you pointed out to me, I think the last smorgasbord I did not do a cookbook giveaway. I forgot to do a cookbook giveaway. I try to do one of those for every smorgasbord episode, but fear not, for this episode, I do have another awesome cookbook lined up, but you'll have to listen on a little bit to find out more about that. So before I get into the topics for today, I just want to do a quick bit of housekeeping. And sorry for all you regular listeners, this is a bit repetitive, but welcome to all the new folks. I want you to know that I love hearing from you. And if you'd like to get a hold of me to suggest show topics or ask questions or just say hello, whatever, you can send an email to me over at feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. You can also find me over on Facebook at facebook.com/kitchencounterpodcast. That's the page for the show, but it's probably better if you're interested in interacting through Facebook to go ahead and join the Facebook group, which if you just go to kitchencounterpodcast.com/group, you'll go to that page and you can request to join and we'll let you in. There's a lot more interaction going on in the group. So if you want to interact that way, that's the best way to go. And of course, Twitter, those sorts of places you can find me too. Like I said, love hearing from all of you, respond to all my emails. And it's a lot of fun. Also, I should mention that if you're interested in something I mentioned on today's show in particular, I will put links and that sort of stuff over in the show notes at kitchencounterpodcast.com/125. And one last bit of housekeeping. I should mention that the show has a couple of new mascots. We actually just Wednesday of this week, a couple of days ago, we went and picked up a couple of new four-month-old kitty cats that are part of our family now. So I'm saying they're the unofficial mascots of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. And we have a little kitty named Slade, a little boy, and a little kitty girl named Charlie. So if you're interested, go to the show notes and I'll upload a picture of our new mascots. All right, let's get into today's topic. Today's show is going to be a little bit more tool-centric than actual ingredient or recipe-centric. Namely, a couple things we're going to be talking about: convection ovens, and we're going to be talking about cast iron cookware. All right, let's get into it. All right, let's start off by talking about convection ovens. And I'm not talking in this particular conversation about the tabletop kind that you can go down to your local department store, or Best Buy or whatever and buy, and they sit on your countertop. They're like giant toaster ovens. Convection ovens, though they are, I'm going to be focusing on the kind of convection ovens that you may or may not already have installed, your regular stove or range top and an oven, you know, slide in, built in, whatever the case may be. The oven that you're cooking your Thanksgiving meals in or you're baking your pies in, that's the convection oven I'm going to be talking about. And I know not all of us have those, so I'm going to talk a little bit about the difference between a convection oven and a conventional oven, which if you have an oven, you'll certainly at least have a conventional type of an oven, but we'll see. We'll get into a little detail about convection oven. And I'm bringing this up today because I got an email from a listener, Mike W., who sent in a note on the egg muffin recipe that I talked about a long, long time ago, early on in the show. Can't even remember what episode it was, but I will put those in the show notes if you want to know about that. This was a recipe that had been going around the internet that was getting a lot of popularity. It was taking a muffin tin and cooking little egg, or whatever you want to call them, pop-outs, muffins, almost mini frittatas. But I went ahead and gave it a try and talked about it on the show. Anyway, Mike W. sent me an email a few days ago saying that he had tried making the egg muffins And he said they were delicious and very simple to make, but he had one complaint, which was the tops ended being a bit leathery. So he posed a question to me, do you think I simply overbake them? If not, is there some sneaky means of correcting the issue? So we actually went back and forth via email a little bit, and I traded some suggestions with him, none of which turned out to solve his leathery top problem on the egg muffins. He did some more experimenting on his own, and Mike actually found out it was his convection setting in his oven that was causing a problem. So he asked if I'd talk a little bit more on the show at some point about convection and conventional oven. So here I am. So we'll get back to Mike's particular situation in a second. And I thought I probably should start out by defining what a conventional oven is and what a convection oven is, and maybe what are the main physical differences between them. So all of us are certainly familiar with conventional ovens. That's your typical oven. You pop open the oven door, you've got three or four rack settings. There's generally a heating element on the bottom of the oven that heats the oven when you bake and roast and things like that. And there's often a heating element on the inside top, the roof, I guess if you'll call it that, of the oven, which is used for the broiler function. And in some conventional ovens, regular baking will heat up both elements. So in a conventional oven, when you go to bake something, for example, and you heat the oven up to 350 degrees, usually what happens is that heating element on the bottom of the oven heats up, and then it allows the hot air to fill the oven chamber until it gets to 350 degrees. And then typically the oven will stop heating itself. It'll turn off the heating element until it cools down enough. It needs to turn it on to sort of maintain the 350 degree or whatever temperature it is that you've set it at. That's the way a regular conventional oven works. Beyond just the heating elements, there's really nothing interesting or fancy happening inside that oven. Now, all ovens are different, of course, and sometimes ovens heat a little better than other ovens. Sometimes there's cool or colder spots inside an oven, believe it or not, that can actually happen. And, you know, because heat rises, sometimes the upper half of your oven is going to be a little bit warmer than the bottom half of your oven, for example. That can also happen. And again, every oven's different, so I'm not saying this is a universal problem or issue with all ovens, and all ovens can be quirky. And I think most of us who do a lot of work in our oven understand, like, oh, my oven takes forever to preheat, or, my oven, even though it says it's 350, it runs a little hot, you know, whatever the case may be. Ovens are idiosyncratic creatures, so you should always take the temperature and the settings and that sort of a thing with a bit of a grain of salt until you understand your particular oven. Okay, so let's talk about a convection oven, which, for all intents and purposes, looks from the outside a lot like a regular conventional oven. What sets a convection oven apart, however, is a couple new pieces of hardware. One being, if you have a convection oven, you know you have a convection oven, you can pop it open and look in, and on the back wall, you'll probably see a circular enclosure with a fan. That little fan is responsible for the main difference between a convection and a conventional oven. So remember, in a conventional oven, the heating elements just heat up, and the heat just kind of does whatever it's going to do inside that oven. In a convection oven, that fan rotates, and it actually circulates the hot air throughout that oven. Usually also there's some sort of an exhaust system in the oven coupled with that fan that will help pull out moisture as it's using the convection feature in that oven. Now, so while the fan and the exhaust are maybe the main difference between a conventional and a convection oven, there are some convection ovens that even take it a step further and have a third heating element behind the fan. Those are typically called a three-element convection oven, or sometimes they're referred to as a European convection. The convection oven I have, I believe it's a Jennaer. I think, as far as I know, it's just a heating element on the bottom of the oven, a heating element on the top, and then the fan and the exhaust in the back. I don't have a third heating element. And as far as I know, the advantage to that third heating element behind the fan is that when the fan is on and it's circulating the hot air, it's actually bringing in hot air because it's passing over that element rather than bringing in maybe a little bit cooler air from the exhaust system as it's circulating the hot air that's already present inside the oven. But regardless, it's that fan and that exhaust that really stand out for convection ovens. So why is that a big deal? Well, that's the physical difference, but that fan and that exhaust actually make a big difference when it comes to performance of the things that you're cooking in that oven. So because the fan circulates hot air throughout the oven, you don't usually have the problem of things like cooler and warmer regions inside your oven. That fan moves the air around and it makes sure everything is nice and evenly heated. Secondly, it typically results in a drier environment inside of your oven. The fan blowing the warm air coupled with that exhaust system can pull some of the moisture out of your oven as it's heating, which is a great thing for things like roasted foods, where you want a nice dry heat environment to properly roast whatever it is you have in the oven. It'll result in a crispier skin on your chicken, for example, or more nice crispy browning on your veggies if you're roasting veggies. So there is a definite performance difference when it comes to a convection oven. The other thing that a convection oven really excels at is letting you use multiple racks at a time when you're using your oven. You've probably noticed if you have a conventional oven, it's really inefficient or really difficult to put multiple foods. Let's just use cookies for an example. Let's say you have a big batch of cookies. You need a couple of sheet trays to bake them. Well, in a conventional oven, generally you're going to do one tray at a time. If you do multiple trays, you know, out an upper rack and a lower rack, you usually have to rotate the pans, rotate the position on the racks between the pans to make sure everything gets evenly baked. Well, in a convection oven, a lot of that is solved because, again, the air is circulating from that fan, so you get an even heating and you don't have these weird problems where the cookies on different racks are baking at different rates or browning at different rates. Convection ovens can also generally cook food a little bit quicker than a conventional oven can. When you're looking at recipes that call for you to bake something or roast something in the oven, unless it states that it's written for a convection oven, you should assume that it's written for a conventional oven. If you want to translate that to use in a convection oven or in a convection setting inside your oven, you probably will need to adjust. Now, I mentioned earlier that every oven is a little bit different, so these are things you might have to experiment a little bit with until you really understand how your particular oven functions. But generally, I say, and this is something you'll find all over the internet, and it's a good starting point. Again, it's not necessarily a hard and fast rule, but I call it the rule of 25. So if you have a conventional oven recipe, you'll either want to lower the temperature by 25 degrees Fahrenheit or shorten the cooking time by about 25% to translate it to a recipe that'll work for your convection oven. So for example, if you have a cookie recipe that says bake at 350 degrees for 12 minutes, you could either lower it to 325 degrees and keep it in there for your 12 minutes, or leave it at 350 degrees and shorten your cooking time to like 9 minutes or so, that 25% shorter cooking time to adapt it for a convection oven. Again, this is something you're going to practice with, keep an eye on until you understand exactly how to convert recipes to work for your particular convection oven. Well, so far, it sounds like everything I've said is rah-rah convection ovens, and they are pretty great. They do result in great roasted foods. They do bake a lot quicker generally, and they are great, like I said, at utilizing multiple oven racks. However, there are a few applications where convection ovens are not necessarily a good thing or the right solution. You know, that little fan that blows the air and circulates, depending on how it's put in there and how the air is directed, that can actually be quite powerful. And if you have something in the oven that's made from, say, a liquid batter, like a quick bread, or let's go back to Mike W's case with the egg muffins, which go in kind of as a egg batter in a way, or beaten eggs, you know, with some milk and some other delicate type of baked goods, the convection can actually cause the outside layer of whatever it is you've got in the oven to cook quicker than the inside layer. So in the case of Mike's scenario with the egg muffins, it probably did cook the top of those egg muffins to more of a leathery consistency with that hot air circulating, hitting that delicate surface, turned it leathery. Well, it can do the same thing with, let's say, cake batter. It can actually cook the top of your cake batter quicker than it'll cook the inside. So the outside might be very done, but the cake inside is still, you know, underbaked. So that can be a problem where convection cooking is not going to be a good solution. You want to stick with regular baking in a conventional setting or a conventional oven. So I'll put some links in the show notes to a couple of websites that talk a lot more about convection ovens. And again, remember, I'm not necessarily talking about the convection ovens that sit on your countertop, though everything I've described is exactly the way those work. They're just at a much smaller, more compact scale. You're not going to probably roast a chicken in your, you know, countertop convection oven. At least the ones I've seen are a little too small for that. So just keep that in mind. And interestingly, you know, I know some of you are very interested in air fryers. Air fryers work very much the same way that convection ovens work. It's a process of very hot air being circulated by a fan, blowing over the food, which really crisps it up and kind of gives it a faux fry texture and finish. Now, air fryers are configured a little bit differently from where the fan is and the size of the chamber where you cook your food. So it probably does simulate frying a little bit better than a convection oven does. But at the end of the day, it's the same process, the same bits of hardware doing the work. And I will put over at the show notes just for fun today. I grabbed a few things and I did a couple of batches of chicken legs where I did some regular oven and then some on convection roast setting. And then I took some potatoes and I did the same thing. I sliced up some potato sticks, for example, just from raw russet potatoes. Threw them in. I did some on the regular conventional oven setting, and then I did some on the convection setting. So you can go over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/125. I'll throw in a couple of pictures so you can kind of see the difference, at least in my oven, between conventional and convection. All right. So that's my bit on convection and conventional ovens. The second thing I want to talk about in the smorgasbord episode was prompted by something that came up in the Facebook group, the Kitchen Counter Coffee Break, the official Facebook group for the show. And member Sander Camps posted a message a couple of weeks ago. And he said, "Hello, everybody. I'm thinking about buying my first cast iron skillet." Congratulations, Sander. That's an awesome purchase. He didn't say that. I did. "What should I know about them? And does anybody have some great advice for me? Thanks." Wow. So there was a ton of comments on this particular message. So I wanted to take a couple of minutes and just mention a few things about cast iron. And Sander actually got a lot of great responses and advice from folks in the group. So I don't want to, you know, go over all of that. Again, here you can hop over to the group, join the group, and you can read all of it. And actually, I should mention, I've been trying to get an expert from Lodge. Lodge is probably the largest manufacturer of cast iron cookware, at least in the United States. I've been trying to get someone from Lodge on the show to talk all about cast iron cookware, caring for it, and how to buy it, and that sort of stuff. So hopefully that will happen soon. So I don't want to steal all of that thunder. And maybe these comments are aimed a little more for the folks out there who don't own cast iron cookware and have never used it than maybe for the folks who use a lot and are really comfortable with it. And I don't want to get into the whole process of seasoning pans and things like that. I just want to talk a little bit about cast iron to maybe ease some fears from folks who are a little bit worried about it or think it's too complicated and fussy. So cast iron cookware is extremely hardy and durable cookware. In fact, a lot of people who own cast iron cookware, you know, got it because it was passed down to them, perhaps from their grandparents and back like that. If you own cast iron cookware, if you take care of it, you can certainly pass it down to future generations if it's taken care of. Not only is it hardy and durable, it's relatively inexpensive, just straight cast iron. Some of the enameled cast iron products, like, you know, enameled cast iron, enameled Dutch ovens, those can be a little more expensive, obviously, because there's a little more to the process to produce them. But I mean, just to give you an example of the price point here. So as I record this on December 8th, 2018, I just went to Amazon. I looked up Lodge cast iron skillet And the 10-inch Lodge cast iron skillet pre-seasoned is just under $15. That is an amazing price. In fact, regular price is like $26 or $27. That's also an amazing price. If you want, you know, just a point of comparison, I looked up an all-clad stainless steel 10-inch frying pan, and that comes in at about $74. So, you know, the cost of cast iron is low compared to similar types of cookware out there. So it's definitely something you can spend a little bit of money on and have a piece that, if you take care of it, will last you a long time. Now, the piece that people have heartburn over is the taking care of it part, because it seems like cast iron is a bit fussy. And is it fussy? I wouldn't say it's fussy. Does it take a little more work than, say, taking care of stainless steel cookware? Yeah, it takes a little more work than that, certainly. But if it's something you just get used to doing, it's not really a lot of work, and it's really easy to maintain. And a lot of the heartburn about maintaining cast iron cookware comes around to the seasoning. So what is seasoning? Well, if you were to take or find a raw cast iron skillet that hasn't been seasoned, just manufactured, it's probably not going to look like most of the cast iron skillets you see in the store, which have that kind of a black or really dark brown, black, gray look to them. Those are pre-seasoned. Those are, you know, already been seasoned at the factory. Unseasoned cast iron looks a lot like a more of a silvery, grayish metallic. And the seasoning is what makes all of the difference. A cast iron skillet, for example, is no good if it's not seasoned. So what is seasoning? Well, you know, I'm not a chemist, but I'll do my best to explain it in like two sentences. So seasoning is when oil or fat is coated on your cast iron cookware, and it's heated to a high enough temperature for a long enough time that, you know, without learning all the chemical names, basically what happens is that fat and oil almost turns to a plastic, a non-porous, kind of a non-stick plastic coating. I mean, it's not plastic, but it's a like plastic in its properties, except you can heat cast iron up to super high heats. It's not going to hurt that seasoning. And over time, as you take care of your cast iron, that seasoning just kind of builds upon itself. So as you cook with cast iron, let's say you fry up a steak, you know, you simply need to take some warm water and maybe like a little nylon, we used to call them like chore girls or whatever, those little poofy scrubber things. And if you do it while the cast iron's still a little bit warm, you can clean it out with basically warm water and a little scrubber, and you're not going to hurt the seasoning. And then you dry it out really well. You rub a little more oil in there and, you know, make sure there's no oil pooling up and it's kind of wiped down and there's no water anywhere, and you're done. You put it away until you use it the next time, and you kind of follow that same process over and over again. And I'm oversimplifying it a little bit, but essentially that's all you need to do to have some really good, you know, non-stick. Essentially, it's not Teflon. It's not as non-stick as Teflon. I've seen people with cast iron that they can cook an egg in it and that egg will slide around almost like it's in Teflon. That's a really well long seasoned pan. You know, so taking care of it takes a little work. You have to keep them dry. You cannot let them soak. You cannot put them away wet, because iron will rust at like with a dirty look. It just takes a little bit of water. Even a well seasoned pan, if it's put away with water, that can spell really bad news. So you just have to make sure they're really dried out and really taken care of. Now, why all that fuss for cast iron? Well, if you've got to do that, why would I even want a cast iron pan? Why wouldn't I just get some nice stainless steel pieces? And I would say, I love stainless steel cookware. Stainless steel can do a lot of good stuff for you. Can it do everything cast iron does? Not exactly, but cast iron, there's a few things that it does so well. Cast iron cookware excels at frying. Frying chicken in cast iron cookware is about the best thing you can do. It's one of the best vessels to cook fried chicken. For example, cast iron is the way to go. I know a lot of people that love to bake in their cast iron, whether it's making pizzas right in their cast iron skillet, making cornbread or other breads, making meals where you put the whole skillet in the oven and, you know, in the restaurants, you always see the fajitas come out on the sizzling platter. Well, that's made of cast iron because it gets really, really hot. And that's another point, getting it really, really hot, you can really put a beautiful sear on things like your steaks, on a piece of cast iron cookware. You can heat those things up so hot, they're just like screaming hot, and it just makes a beautiful sear on your steaks. It's a lot of other cookware will not do that. Stainless steel can get close, but even cast iron, it's not a great conductor of heat, but once it gets hot, it holds the heat really, really well. Now, cast iron is a reactive metal, so typically you want to avoid cooking acidic food in cast iron cookware, with a couple of exceptions. A well-seasoned cast iron pan can take a little bit of short cooking with like a tomato sauce or something like that, but you're not going to want to do a long simmering like tomato sauce in your cast iron cookware if the cast iron is, you know, even if it's seasoned, if it's not enameled, because that can cause some reaction. Your food will taste a little bit funny, and it could even cause discoloration in your food and your pan. And cast iron is also great for open fire or grill top cooking. It can take open flame and direct heat very, very well. That being said, I have a ceramic top stove top, and I do use cast iron on it, but you have to be careful on the glass and the ceramic cooktops, because if you slide your cast iron, it can scratch that pretty easily. So you have to be very careful when you're cooking on those sorts of surfaces. And if cast iron cookware and the thought of seasoning it and maintaining it scares you away, maybe for a first step, look at some enameled cast iron pieces. They're a little less fussy. There's no seasoning involved. They have a lot of the same great properties as cast iron with the heat and the frying aspect. So maybe look into some enameled cast iron pieces. Of course, the famous name brand ones would be like Le Creuset and Staub. Lodge makes some really good, relatively affordable enameled cast iron pieces. So maybe look at that as a first step. But I think if you're serious about home cooking, you can't do worse really than having like a 10 or a 12 inch cast iron skillet in your cupboard, because as you get more confident with cooking and trying new things, there are going to be a lot of dishes where the cast iron is going to serve you very, very well. As I said, I'm trying to get somebody from Lodge on the show, so hopefully in the relatively near future, I'll have an episode even more devoted to cast iron. And in the show notes for this episode, I'll put a link to some places where you can get some good information on cast iron as well. So I'm glad Sander asked that question in the group. He got a lot of interesting responses. And I think cast iron cookware is something that all home cooks should give a shot. Okay, I'm kind of running out of time for today's show, so I'm going to wrap it up with the aforementioned Promise cookbook giveaway. And today, because it's December, and I don't know about you, but in my family, December is a pretty big cookie month. In fact, it might be the biggest cookie month. Well, you know, we're Christmas observers, so we make all sorts of Christmas and holiday cookies. And chances are you probably do too. So today's cookbook giveaway is one of our favorite cookie cookbooks. It came out, I believe, in 2017, and it is Dory's Cookies by Dory Greenspan. This is an amazing hardcover cookbook, tons of incredible photographs, and oh gosh, I haven't counted how many, I have it right in front of me. I haven't counted how many cookie recipes are in here, but there's a cookie recipe that you need. It's in here, and there's so many new, unique ones. I'm just going to randomly open it up and see what we've got here. Let's see, something I can describe. Oh, it even tells you how to make your own fortune cookies. Here we go. Old Bay pretzel and cheese cookies. That sounds interesting. I haven't made those. So there's savory cookies, macarons, pumpkin whoopie pies with dulce de leche filling, cocoa almond thumbprints, devil's food waffles with chocolate sauce. Not very cookie-like, but that sounds good. So there's tons of stuff. Meringue snowballs. I mean, it is an amazing cookbook. I mean, I think it's almost 500 pages of recipes. So this, not this one, this is my copy, but a copy could be yours. And here's how you can win it. All you need to do is one of two things. You can either send me an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com and tell me what your favorite cookie is. Doesn't have to be a Christmas cookie. It can be any type of cookie. Tell me what your favorite cookie is. Or you can head over to Facebook at facebook.com/kitchencounterpodcast and send a message into me telling me the same thing, your favorite cookie. I will put your name into a drawing for Dory Greenspan's Dory's Cookies Cookbook. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to give you until Christmas Eve, the end of Christmas Eve, to get your entries in. And then on Christmas Day or the day after, probably, I will draw a name. I'll get a hold of you and we'll send a copy of Dory's Cookies over to you. Now, if you don't like cookies and you don't want this cookbook, maybe you should just make up a cookie that you like and give it away as a late Christmas present. That's all I'm saying. All right. So Dory's Cookies could be yours. Just send me an email, feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com, or a Facebook message to tell me what your absolute favorite type of cookie is to get your name into the drawing. All right, folks, that does it for one more episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me here. It really does mean a lot that you're taking the time while you're driving or baking cookies or, you know, going to the gym or just sitting at your kitchen counter, whatever, to listen to the show. It does mean a lot to me. I really, really appreciate it. As I said, I've got several episodes lined up here that'll probably come out before the end of the year. One of them might even be about cookies, so we'll have to see. Don't forget the cookie cookbook giveaway. And, you know, if you like the show and you're getting some value out of it, please tell your friends and your family about the show. That's the single best way to turn other people on to what we're doing here. All right, everybody. Once again, I am Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. And until next time, happy cooking.